The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter and the Harvard Health Letter. And in fact, the first article comes from the Harvard Health Letter of October 2020. And it's entitled, Tips to Improve Concentration. Mindfulness, cognitive training, and a healthy lifestyle may help sharpen your focus. You're trying to concentrate, but your mind is wandering, or you're easily distracted. What happened to the laser-sharp focus you once enjoyed? Older people tend to have more difficulty filtering out stimuli that are not relevant to the task at hand, says Dr. Kirk Daffner, a neurologist and director of the Center for Brain-Mind Medicine at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. What's fogging up focus? Like a computer that slows with use, the brain accumulates wear and tear that affects processing. Dr. Daffner says this can be caused by a number of physiologic stressors, like inflammation, injury to blood vessels, especially if you have high blood pressure, the buildup of abnormal proteins, and naturally occurring brain shrinkage. The following factors can also affect your concentration. Underlying conditions. Depression or sleep disorders like sleep apnea can undermine your ability to concentrate. So can the effects of vision or hearing loss. You waste precious cognitive resources when you spend too much time trying to make out what's written on a page or just hear what someone is saying, Dr. Daffner noted. Medication side effects. Some drugs, especially anticholinergics, like those used for treatment of incontinence, depression, or allergies, can slow processing speed and your ability to think clearly. Excessive drinking. Having too much alcohol impairs thinking and causes interrupted sleep, which affects concentration. Information overload. We are bombarded with information from TVs, computers, and messages like texts or emails. When there's too much material, it burdens our filtering system and it's easy to get distracted, Dr. Daffner says. Strategies to stay focused. To improve attention, consider the following strategies. Mindfulness. Mindfulness is about focusing attention on the present moment, and practicing mindfulness has been shown to rewire the brain so attention is stronger in everyday life, says Kim Wilmont, a neuropsychologist with Brigham and Women's Hospital. She recommends sitting still for a few minutes each day, closing your eyes, and focusing on your breathing, as well as the sounds and sensations around you. Cognitive training. Computerized cognitive training games aim to improve your response times and attention. Evidence that this works has been mixed. The goal of playing these games is not to get better at them, but to get better in the cognitive activities of everyday life, Wilmont says. But there is evidence that a person's ability to pay attention can be improved by progressively pushing the person to a higher level of performance. So if you reach a certain level of sustained attention, pushing it to the next level can help to improve it, and this may translate to everyday life. A healthier lifestyle. Many aspects of a healthy lifestyle can help attention, starting with sleep and exercise. There's a direct link between exercise and cognitive ability, especially attention, Dr. Daffner says. When you exercise, you increase the ability of brain chemicals that promote new brain connections, reduce stress, and improve sleep. And when we sleep, we reduce stress hormones that can be harmful to the brain, and we clear out proteins that injure it. Aim for 7 to 8 hours of sleep each night and 150 minutes per week of aerobic exercise, like brisk walking. Other healthy steps to improve focus: eat a Mediterranean-style diet, which has been shown to support brain health. Treat underlying conditions and change medications that may be affecting your ability to focus. Getting older is out of your control, Dr. Daffner says, but healthier living is something you determine, and it may improve concentration. The article goes on to suggest a focus exercise. Want a way to boost your attention and focus? Neuropsychologist Kim Wilmont of Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital suggests a single task exercise like reading. Read something for 30 minutes, setting a timer to go off every 5 minutes. When it goes off, ask yourself if your mind has wandered. If so, just refocus on what you're reading, she says. By training your brain to monitor if your mind is wandering, you strengthen the monitoring process and the ability to maintain focus on a single task. The next article from the Harvard Health Letter is October of 2020, and it's entitled Vaccination Update. We don't yet have a vaccine to prevent COVID-19, but it's still important to get your regularly scheduled shots. You're not alone if you're avoiding doctor visits because of concern about COVID-19. But foregoing medical care means you may be skipping needed vaccinations. That's a huge problem already. Possibly over 100 million people the world over have missed their vaccinations because of the pandemic, says Dr. Shiv Pillai, an immunologist and professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Going without vaccinations may increase your risk for illness, like influenza. We still are just as vulnerable to infection, and we need vaccines to be protected. COVID-19 doesn't change that, says Harvard Health Letter Editor-in-Chief Dr. Anthony Komaroff. How vaccines work. When a germ invades the body, the immune system fights back by making chemicals and cells that recognize and attack the invader. The first time you are infected by a particular germ, call it Invader X. Your immune system responds sluggishly, Dr. Komaroff explains. If Invader X ever infects you again, however, the immune system responds rapidly because it remembers Invader X. Likewise, a vaccine introduces your immune system to a particular germ, but without making you ill. Thereafter, if ever you're really infected, the immune system responds rapidly to attack the germ, Dr. Komaroff says. The benefit of vaccines may go beyond immunity to the germs they introduce. Vaccines might give you a leg up when you encounter other bugs. Activating your immune system may put you in better shape when you face something else. It's just like if you do one type of exercise that makes you fitter. You're likely to do another exercise well, Dr. Pillai says. Some experts have suggested that certain vaccines, specifically the polio vaccine and a vaccine called BCG, used in many countries to ward off tuberculosis, might offer some protection against COVID. How? By revving up the immune system to attack any new invader. Not just polio and tuberculosis, Dr. Komaroff says. This interesting idea is as yet untested. But the concepts being studied, countries in which everyone routinely receives the BCG vaccine, given once in a lifetime, seem to have had fewer deaths from COVID-19. The thought is that it doesn't prevent you from getting infected, but it might reduce the risk of death, Dr. Pillai says. What about a COVID-19 shot? Scientists at Harvard and elsewhere are getting closer to finding a vaccine to prevent COVID-19. At the time this issue of the Health Letter went to press in August 2020, 170 vaccines were under study, and three were already being tested in human trials in the United States. In animals, all three vaccines provided protective immunity against SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, Dr. Pillai says. These promising vaccines are designed to stimulate the immune system to make antibodies against the spike protein on the surface of the coronavirus, the part of the virus that enables it to get inside human cells. The next step is finding out if the vaccines are safe, effective, and long-lasting in humans. Dr. Pillai is hopeful we'll have answers in the first quarter of 2021. What you should do. Until we have a COVID vaccine, you should continue to wear a face mask when you're outside your home. Wash your hands frequently. Avoid touching your face. Avoid spending long periods of time in public indoor spaces. And stay physically distanced, at least 6 feet away, from people not living with you. You should also get the vaccines your doctor recommends. That includes this year's flu shot. Dr. Pillai advises that you get it by the end of October, if you haven't already. Depending on your age and vaccine history, you may also need shots to protect against measles, if you were born in or after 1957, hepatitis A and B, pneumonia, bacteremia, meningitis, shingles, and tetanus. It's true that if you're already wearing a mask, not interacting with many other people, and not going out much, you're less likely to get some of these diseases. For example, a study in Italy showed that during the time of lockdown, the number of cases of flu dropped dramatically. However, unless your doctor feels it's unwise for you to travel outside of your home to get these otherwise important vaccines, you should strongly consider getting them. Next, once again from the Harvard Health Letter of October 2020, what's the best way to measure your blood pressure at home? Get an approved blood pressure device and follow these steps. Monitoring your blood pressure at home has always made good sense. Blood pressure is one of the main indicators of cardiovascular health, and taking measurements is an important way to manage chronic conditions between doctor visits. Now, with the pandemic underway and fewer people visiting their doctors, the case for monitoring blood pressure at home has never been stronger. Home monitoring yields valuable information for you and your physician, who will be counting on you to provide accurate blood pressure measurements when you talk on the phone or in a video chat. If you don't have a blood pressure monitor, it's time to get one. As we reported in September 2020, look for a device that has a large, easy-to-read display, wraps around your upper arm, and automatically inflates the cuff. Make sure the cuff fits your upper arm well, because cuffs that are too small will give falsely elevated readings, says Dr. Naomi Fisher, director of the Hypertension Service and Hypertension Innovation at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. It'll be handy if the blood pressure monitor has a battery life indicator, or even better, if it can plug into an electrical outlet, so you won't have to worry about replacing batteries. Make sure the monitor is approved by the FDA and certified by the Association for the Advancement of Medical Instrumentation, the British Hypertension Society, or the European Society of Hypertension. You'll find a list of approved devices at the website for Stride VP. That's STRIDE, new word, VP. And the website for that is https://stridebp.org/vp-monitors. An international nonprofit group of blood pressure experts. Suitable devices start at about $40. When to measure your blood pressure? Periodically measure your blood pressure twice daily for a week. Do this after your doctor has made an adjustment in medications or dosage, and then every few months once your pressure is controlled, Dr. Fisher advises. During these monitoring weeks, take measurements in the morning and evening, always before taking any morning or evening blood pressure medications. At both times of day, measure your blood pressure twice. A single reading can be inaccurate. The average of two readings is more accurate. If you're experiencing lightheadedness when you stand and you're trying to see if it's because of a drop in blood pressure, take your blood pressure when you're sitting down and then again after you stand up. Avoiding interference. Lots of things can interfere with an accurate blood pressure measurement. Many people measure their blood pressure at varying times of day, sometimes after taking their pills rather than following our recommended schedule, Dr. Fisher says. Often people measure their blood pressure only when they're having symptoms or not feeling well, but it's difficult to interpret a list of blood pressures taken randomly. Other things that can interfere with your blood pressure measurement and drive it higher include exercising, smoking, or drinking anything with caffeine. You'll boost accuracy if you avoid these activities in the half hour before you take your blood pressure. A full bladder can increase your reading as well, so use the bathroom if necessary before taking a reading. What to do with the results? Even if your blood pressure is at your goal, continue taking measurements every few months. If your blood pressure is elevated, report it to your doctor's office, especially if you've had recent change in blood pressure drugs. I tell my patients they will know before I do if a new blood pressure pill is working by averaging their home blood pressures, Dr. Fisher says. That's entirely how it should be. For more information, check out the Harvard Special Health Report, Controlling Your Blood Pressure, and it's at www.health.harvard.edu/HT. The article also summarizes how to measure your blood pressure. Follow these steps to measure your blood pressure at home. Sit at a table with your arm resting comfortably on it, palm facing upward, your back straight, your feet flat on the floor. If necessary, support your arm on a book or pillow so that your elbow is at the level of your heart. Place the blood pressure cuff around your bare upper arm. It should be snug but not tight. Relax for 5 minutes and then take the first reading. Don't talk during the measurement. Write down the results in a log you'll use daily. Wait 1 or 2 minutes then take another reading. Now I'm going to turn to a earlier copy of the Mayo Clinic newsletter. This is actually from January of this year, and this is an article which I did not cover previously, and it's entitled Fibromyalgia, Taking Your Life Back. Fibromyalgia is a term many people know, but is much less common for people to truly understand the disorder. Fibromyalgia doesn't make you look any different. There's no one test that can say for sure that you have it. In addition, there is a wide range of symptoms, which can vary from person to person. You may have heard that fibromyalgia is not a real disease, or that the symptoms are all in a person's head, or that people with fibromyalgia are hypochondriacs or simply depressed or stressed. Make no mistake, fibromyalgia is a real long-term health condition that science is just starting to understand. The core symptom is widespread pain occurring throughout much of the body at about the same level for at least 3 months, with no other explanation for the pain. Improvements in brain imaging and pain testing in recent years have helped doctors gain critical insights into its cause. In particular, fibromyalgia is now understood to be caused by changes in the central nervous system, a disorder called central sensitization, which is linked to many other chronic pain disorders. With better understanding of fibromyalgia has come improved treatment strategies that allow for an individualized whole person approach to address the pain and many other symptoms that can be at play in addition to pain. At the heart of many therapy options and lifestyle steps is the goal of retraining the brain and nervous system so that the shouting of pain signals grows quieter, allowing more pleasant signals to be heard as one works to change and gain control over the pain experience. Turned up and rewired. Your body is covered in sensor cells, which keep track of every sensation in your body and send that information through your spinal cord to the brain. The brain decides what to do with this information. Too cold? Put on a sweater. Thirsty? Have a drink of water. With central sensitization, communication of signals from sensor cells through the spinal cord gets amplified. Over time, the entire nervous system gets turned up to high alert, and the brain starts to think that ordinary sensations, like light touch or a digestive grumble, are painful. In addition to nerve amplifications, pathways within the brain change for the worse. With newer brain imaging techniques, researchers can see that in those with central sensitization, more of the brain is recruited over time to focus on amplified pain signals. It's as if a place with a mix of many highways, rural roads, and side streets were paved over with a few large freeways to more quickly transport pain signals to your brain. The concept of a turned-up nervous system explains how people with fibromyalgia can feel so many different symptoms and why these symptoms can affect one's life so deeply. Adding to this can be issues that coincide with fibromyalgia or stem from it, like lack of sleep, deconditioning from lack of physical activity, stress related to many factors, including finances or relationships, substance misuse, or overlapping diseases. As knowledge of fibromyalgia has improved, experts have identified a symptom profile that can help doctors diagnose fibromyalgia. This starts with a medical history, a discussion of symptoms, a physical exam, and testing to rule out other problems. If fibromyalgia is suspected, questionnaires like the Widespread Pain Index and the Symptom Severity Scale may be used to calculate an overall score. In addition, other criteria like pain in at least four or five regions of the body and pain at about the same level for at least 3 months help form the basis of the fibromyalgia diagnosis. There are many other possible symptoms, with the added potential for overlapping diseases and disorders to complicate the picture. Commonly, these include fatigue lasting months or years, stiffness, migraines, memory problems, or cloudy thinking, which is called fibrofog, sleep problems, pelvic, bladder, or bowel pain, weakness, balance problems, depression, or anxiety. And here are some do's and don'ts for family members to help you support a loved one with fibromyalgia. Do ask how you can help. Do be responsive. This helps you provide the right kind of support. Do have fun and laugh together. This helps foster family support and can distract from pain. Do take care of yourself. Take time for your health and well-being and share your struggles and problems. Fibromyalgia doesn't prevent a loved one from supporting you in return. Don't assume what you think might be helpful may be hurtful or stifling. Don't try to do it all. Allow your loved one to do manageable tasks. Don't hunker down. Life isn't over, though you may need to adapt, adjust, and be flexible to make things work. Don't push your own needs aside. This can deplete your emotional and physical reserves. Nurture your own health and continue to support and explore your interests. Well, it looks like we ran out of time for today's issue of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you very much for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.